This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is brought to you by Flight by Yuengling, the next generation of light beer.
Ball game.
You can drive home safe to Chicago. Beep, beep. We're coming back home with a winning record. The baby Bulls.
4-2 on this six-game road trip against the Western Conference. And the Bulls still solidifying for the moment the number 9 spot in the East. And they will head home very happy.
Yeah, the Bulls have a good reason, Marshall Harris, to head home very happy as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers.
Well, Layla, they have lots of reasons to be happy, but the number one reason is not only do they still have that 9 seed and are a game and a half clear of the Miami Heat behind them, they're only 2 games back of the 8 seed, which would give them 2 chances to win one game to get into the 2025 NBA playoffs. Also, 10 games left. I looked at the schedule. 6-4 looking real likely. 7-3 real possible.
Which is good for the Bulls after they had a bear, pun intended, of a road trip where they just came off of a dominating win over Denver in Denver without Nikola Jokic, but they still get the job done. Don't forget, they also beat the Lakers on Saturday 146-115, which, not to sound all first takey here.
Oh.
But did the Bulls cause the Lakers to go into a tailspin?
I mean, we'll find out Thursday. That's my official on-the-record answer to that. Because if they beat them again on Thursday, I'll be like, absolutely.
What's wrong with the Lakers?
Well, that's every day on that particular program that you had mentioned.
Okay, normally I don't fall into these things easily. I get entertained by that stuff, but there are numbers and quotes to back this up.
Give it to me.
Okay, so first of all, they've lost 7 of their last 10 games.
That's not good.
One of those losses was just to the Magic last night, 118-106.
That's really not good.
Then you start to see bleak quotes that start to filter in, like J.J. Redick saying, we're going through it a little bit.
I think they're going through it a lot, but 7 out of 10 is a lot of games to lose.
But given that J.J. Redick is a peer, and he's a head coach, and he's in this leadership position, when he says that, that's self-contained to those of us, right? Like, that's a message we see loud and clear. You're not just going through it a little bit. What's happening, you guys? LeBron comes back, you've still got Luka, the Bulls just beat you and scored almost 150 points on you at home. You lose to the Magic. What's happening over there? Did the Bulls help break them?
I think the Bulls had certainly an impact on them. Remember when they made the trade for Luka and then the trade with the Charlotte Hornets got rescinded for Mark Williams? You remember all that? We talked about their defense being problematic. And then they played very good defense for a while. But now I think we're seeing a team that is struggling defensively. They gave up 146 points to the Bulls. To the Magic, they gave up 118. To the Bucks before that, they gave up 118. In wins over the Nuggets and the Spurs, they gave up 108 and 109. The Lakers
146er is still ridiculous. Like, let's just call that what it was.
Okay. Like, I'm just looking at this team right now, the Lakers, I'm saying, as a team that is very much trying to find itself before the real games start. And by real games, I mean the playoffs.
And that's not to take anything away from the Bulls' accomplishment. Because absolutely what they've done, thusly winning 8 of their last 10 games, you have to respect the body of work the Bulls have put together. We gave you the numbers earlier on the show. You can check it out on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app at 10 o'clock. We went over Coby White's performances. We went over how he's now Eastern Conference Player of the Week 2 weeks in a row, and the last person to do that and only Bull, as you mentioned, MJ. That puts him in elite company. When you consider the streak he's had of scoring, That in Bulls history puts him in elite company. Guys like Bob Love, Zach LaVine, DeMar, MJ. That's wonderful company to be in. So the Bulls deserve their flowers. But when the Lakers traded for Luka Doncic, and of course I was mad about it, but also it was an earth-shattering story in the world of sports. It seemed to come together at first relatively quickly. That's what makes this so surprising.
Luka was magically healthy after missing so much time in Dallas.
Yes, he was, and suddenly his weight didn't matter anymore. In Los Angeles, think about that. The other piece of this, though, for the Lakers and their struggles is, how are they not making it work offensively? In the third quarter in the last two games, Bulls outscore them 39-27. Magic outscore them 34-18.
Those would be overwhelmingly in favor of the Lakers' opponents.
You can't have that lackluster total coming out of a halftime break.
You shouldn't anyway.
Especially with a team that's a little bit older and maybe they want a little bit of a, you know, a couple minutes to rest up for a second to collect their respective breath.
By the way, do you know who did play last night?
Yes.
Anthony Davis played.
Yay! He's back!
Also, they're now tied
poor
at 35
AD,
and 37
guys.
With the Phoenix Suns. So they still have a path to get into the play-in and potentially the playoffs because apparently the Sacramento Kings are falling apart.
Well, Lakers are, which by the way, what do you mean they're falling apart? They have DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine.
Yeah. That's working out about as well as I told the people in Sacramento that was going to work out for them. But also they're missing Domantas Sabonis, so that actually matters.
I think Sabonis is the key here.
And I want to point out, because we do focus on the fact that a three-time MVP did not take the court last night against the Bulls. They didn't have Aaron Gordon either, so they were shorthanded.
Yeah, it was Jamal Murray and them.
Yes, Jamal Murray and them.
Yeah, that's
multiple them.
That's pretty much where. But either way, the Bulls still had to win. Like your job is to face the team that you have on your schedule, and if they are down players, but there's also a reason there where maybe you might be more inclined to rest players if you're Denver. When you consider the Thunder right now, 59-12, Rockets 46-26, they're 13.5 games back of the Thunder in second place. Then it's Denver at 15. Lakers a game back of the Nuggets. They're tied with the Grizzlies right now, 43-28.
Who's behind the Grizzlies?
Well. If it isn't, your Golden State Warriors. But I want to hear some more Lakers malaise because the JJ...
I'll never turn that down.
Exactly. The JJ Redick quote was something. I know there's some other post-game sound that we have thanks to you and Studs, Ray. Let's check this out.
I think a couple guys maybe from the... from the schedule and being in and out of the lineup and a couple guys being injured, like I don't know. We just, we look tired. And I don't know what contributes to that. That happens periodically throughout a season where the group gets tired. That's what it feels like right now.
I understand you're going to go through ups and downs in an 82 game season, especially when you're trying to adjust to new personnel. Relatively speaking.
Also, the Lakers are old. I just want to point that out.
And your age is going to factor in. Just like how we talk about the Bulls being able to run and how they want to do more with their age against teams like this. And we see what happens to their numbers in the fourth quarter and how they're able to pull away from teams recently.
That was the most surprising part of that game last night, is how the Bulls looked like they could have just kept running. They were in Denver. Do you know what the home court advantage brings in Denver? Thin air that you're not used to. And they were in the last game on a 6-game road trip. It did not matter. That's wild to me. But young legs. Now, young legs in the playoffs is a different thing because now it's a half-court game and you're not going to get to run all the time.
That part.
Yeah, but it'll be fun. Yeah, like I said, if you go to the altar in Cleveland, not to get married but to get sacrificed, so be it. At least you learned something from the experience.
No, I agree. I like that we're in a point of accepting the playoffs. And there was some sound we wanted to get to from the Bulls game that we didn't get to in the 10 o'clock hour that might be worth looking into since we're here. Since we can talk about how the Bulls perhaps broke the Lakers, we can also give the Bulls some more credit.
They broke the Lakers and they made themselves whole. How about that?
I think they did. But if you think that we're the only ones talking about the potential loss of a tank versus what the Bulls are trying to put together. In our search for answers and understanding, Billy Donovan had this gem last night.
Taking back a couple weeks, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had to challenge him with his scoring specifically to take on more. Is that correct?
I challenged him more from the standpoint, I think, of whatever he was talking about is his, when Zach and DeMar left, and now all of a sudden there's more of this responsibility on Kobe. The easiest guy to guard in those situations is a guy in the half court because there's bodies around you. And I think this has been a really good stretch where I think you see Kobe working off the ball to get out and up the floor and transition, and guys are finding him and he's getting catch and shoot opportunities. Like I forget what game it was. It may have been the Sacramento game. I don't know how many points he had in the game, but I think like it was some crazy number, like 20 of his points were like in transition in the open floor. And that's what he has to do. And that requires a lot of effort because he's got to get up the floor. He's got to catch it. But what happens is it allows him to play in space. And I think when you're playing in the half court constantly, they can put bigger, longer, more aggressive guys on you, and you can try to run things, but then you can get a little bit stagnant. But I give him credit as he's found ways with regards to who's guarding him that if he can get out in the open floor and we can find him, then he's playing in space, and he's got his three, he's got the drive, and he can kick, and he can make plays from there. So it wasn't so much that I was asking him to score more, but I was asking him more that he has to get up the floor so he can for us. Like, he's got to make the game easier for himself, and some of the ways you make it easier for yourself is the endurance that you have to have. That's why Curry's so great. I mean, I know he's an unbelievable shooter. The number one thing for Curry that impressed me more than is the endurance to keep running and running and running and running and wearing you down and wearing you down. That's what he does, and it's hard, and he just nonstop motion. And, you know, he's getting keyed on all the time. And I think this is part of Kobe's growth and what he's gone through as a player of what he's learning.
So the reason I appreciate that is Billy Donovan's telling you what he's asking of arguably his most important player right now outside of Josh Giddey, I would say.
I was going to say, are we back to this? Because we were trying to figure out who the most guys.
We know
in what order.
We've isolated our three, correct?
Yes, but which order are those three?
Yeah, I still think because of Giddey's free agency, he's your number one question mark or your number one focus.
Okay.
But in doing so, he's illustrating to you what he's also asking of the rest of his team in a way. Because you're seeing the positive results with Kobe. We know he takes to coaching. We know that he's produced in this manner. We know that it hasn't been at this clip where you've had three straight games with at least 35 points. So that gives you an indication as to what Billy Donovan is trying to do with this group moving forward.
Well, for Billy, it's always been about development and winning. And for him, the two have never been able to be separated. And that's part of the problem when you're talking about tanking. Players don't tank. Coaches don't tank. The front office has to tank. The front office in the parts that they got back in these trades, whether you want to talk about Trey Jones, Zach Collins, Kevin Huerter, they didn't get bad enough parts back. I mean, when I say tank, usually you tank and you get guys back who are eventually bought out. That didn't happen here. They got viable NBA parts. And when you get viable NBA parts to supplement what Josh Giddey was trying to do, get paid, Kobe White was trying to do, be the guy, and Matis Bezelis also trying to do more, and then Patrick Williams gets hurt, and then Io goes out. It all kind of works out for who is left standing in the building. I mean, I think this team would be just as good, if not better, if Io was still around, because now you don't have to go deeper into the bench with guys who don't have as much experience. But if
defense is better, too.
Yeah, defense is better, too. But, you know, the question was before, you can't keep both Io and Kobe. Which one of them are you going to move? The answer for me before this all happened, before Io went out with an injury, was, oh, well, you're definitely keeping Io and trading Kobe. You could probably get more for him, and Io plays both sides of the court better.
Yeah, better two-way player for
better
sure.
Better two-way player. Yeah. But now that Io is hurt, can't trade injured guys, and Kobe's doing what he's doing, trading him seems like it doesn't make as much sense because we know that AK is just going to try to get back parts that can help them win. You already have the part that can help you win in Kobe. So if you're not going to get maximum value for him in draft assets, go ahead and keep him. I'm not saying that's what I would do. I'm just looking through the lens of the track record of Arturis Karnišovas.
No, and I think that that's the only way you can interpret all of this. To speak even further to the Bulls' philosophy of just trying to outrun opponents, this from our friend Drew Stevens at It's the Bigs. He has the Bulls' net ratings from the first, second, third, and fourth quarters of their last six games. First quarter, minus 5.6.
Sounds about right.
The net rating. Second quarter, minus 0.6.
Okay, we're running.
There you got your little halftime. Keep in mind what I told you about the Lakers, right?
Yes.
How they outscored the Lakers. Third quarter, 13.3.
That's a plus 13.3, correct?
Correct. And now the fourth quarter, 33.1.
Over the last how many games?
Six.
Yeah.
Road trip.
That works. That's the road trip. That's the road trip in a nutshell. Even in the games that they weren't able to come back and win against Houston and Phoenix, they made that push to make it closer than it really was at the end of the game. So that all adds up nicely. Again, I think Thursday's game becomes that much more of a data point because we just saw the way they embarrassed the Lakers at their building. If you can do that at a place where you haven't played very well all season, home, against that same Lakers team, your question coming into the segment was, did the Bulls put the Clippers, Lakers.
We got to do it in Stephen A. voice because it's very first taking. Did the Bulls break the Lakers?
Yes.
Question mark, bold font.
They seem like they're not necessarily broken, but they are damaged. Not to the point of no repair. But if the Bulls double down and beat the Lakers again at United Center, that will be like, I'll come in here and be like, Layla, they broke them. They're broken.
Oh, my God. You know who we should talk to about this, by the way?
Who's that?
Our next guest.
Oh, is Cody coming?
Cody Westerlund, who knows a thing or two about being at the United Center covering the Bulls. I'd be very curious to see his take on, did the Bulls beat the Lakers?
Yes, they also did that.
I can hear Stephen A. Smith in the first take team being like, did the Bulls break the Lakers? Just something to bring it back. And then somehow you bring in the Cowboys. And Ezekiel Elliott. And then we've got a show.
I think what's great about this is Cody was trying to convince us all that, oh, don't worry, the tank's on. I'll have him sit in that chair right over there and tell us the tank is officially dead.
And now we've come to the portion of the season called tank acceptance or lack of tank acceptance. I can't say this without laughing.
I've accepted it. You know where I stand on this.
Lack of tank acceptance. Well, does that mean competitive acceptance?
Yeah, accepting that they're going to be a competitive team the rest of the way.
We'll work on the title during the break. Cody is next on the Score.
One pull down, rebounded by Giddey, and Giddey will advance over the midcourt line, and that will do it. And what a road trip for the Chicago Bulls as the Bulls take care of business out west and win four out of their last six games here against Western Conference ball clubs. Ball game over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado, 129-119.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
That's right, Chuck Swirsky. You are correct. And not only are you correct, but let's go out a little even further because the Bulls have won 8 of their last 10 games. And before we get into more Bulls talk, we want to mention on Thursday, Marshall Harris and I are at the newly remodeled Wings and Rings on Halsted as we broadcast live from 10 to 2 before the Southside home opener. Come by, enjoy great food and ice cold yingling as we celebrate the official return of baseball on the South Side. And don't lie to us. I know who might be out there that early having a yingling.
Who?
All of our crew who are Sox fans.
Oh.
When 08 guys showed up,
go get it,
it'll be fun.
That's Sox machine.
All of it.
That's my first time.
Oh, no, it's a good time. Season opening shows are fun. That is this Thursday from 10 to 2, all brought to you by Yingling, America's oldest brewery. Cody Westerlund now joining our Bulls party. Did you hear our ridiculous first take-ish segment, the last segment?
Yeah, have the Bulls sent the Lakers in a tailspin. Is that correct?
Yeah, all the trouble we get in with another tailspin.
I think the answer to that will probably be Thursday night at the United Center. The Bulls, if the Bulls come back and do it again, you might be able to say the Lakers are in a tailspin. But
hold on. Is this the biggest game of the year on Thursday?
No.
No, that'll be the play-in 9-10 game.
outside of whatever you want to call the postseason.
You're saying so far.
Yes.
Did you say game of the year or moment of the year? Because the moment of the year was always going to be the lottery odds day. if the Bulls get there, which is what, a Sunday in May now?
The Bulls aren't getting there. I need you to accept that.
Well, Mitch has been asking me in the hallway, what's the percentage chance the Bulls actually make the real playoffs? I just gave him 31%. Do you have the number higher? They're going to need to win back-to-back toss-up games.
Basically. No, they're not. They're going to get to the 8 seed. They'll have two shots to win one game.
You think they're running down the Magic. The Magic have been playing much better.
They
have
the Magic also beat the Lakers.
Yeah, they also beat the Lakers. They didn't beat them like the Bulls beat them, but they also beat
the Lakers. Yeah, it's certainly possible. What? Got to make up two games with 10 to play.
What if it comes down to the last game of the season against Philly?
Well, I think I know the result of what that game.
Yeah, Philly will tell you that they're tanking. Well, they know a process.
That is the reason why I say they're going to catch the Magic, because when you look at the Bulls' last 10 opponents, there's a lot of these guys definitely aren't going to try to win.
Yep.
So it's just a matter of you're probably going to lose to teams like Oklahoma City and some of the other teams they have on the schedule. But when you look at the Orlando Magic schedule, it's a little bit different, a little bit more daunting, because they're playing teams that are actually fighting for playoff spots.
Yeah, a lot of that gets lost, too, because the percentages on those two teams, Bulls and Magic, remaining schedule is about the same. But there's a couple teams on the Magic schedule that are playing harder, and that's like, this is why March basketball is so weird in the NBA. Not just because everyone's watching the NCAA tournament and then, like, what's going on in the NBA popping up, you know, once a week or something there, checking the standings, but it's like, who's invested in winning that night? And it's not just with making up injuries, who is playing, who isn't playing, but, like, we've seen the Raptors for weeks playing their stars 24 to 28 minutes, not playing them the last 9 minutes of games. Obviously, in some situations. So, organizationally, all these teams are in weird spots. The NBA's in a weird spot, but the Bulls, they trot everyone out there. I mean, Kobe's playing, what, 39 minutes last night, 40 minutes at altitude against the Nuggets, having a sensational game. Like, the Bulls are going as hard as anyone in the NBA right now, and it's what's really helped propel them at this point.
I also wonder if, bigger picture, when you consider what the NBA wanted to do with this play-in tournament, if this is what they wanted. They wanted you to care about teams that maybe were out previously, where you did just care about the draft lottery. Maybe you even had a draft lottery watch party. We've had a time or two.
I don't think the play-in tournament's been a hit. I mean, I think it's been a hit in the sense that it gave them, what, four, six more games to put on national TV to make some money. But, like, to me, the in-season tournament has been, like, a thumbs up, and the play-in tournament, to me, has been a thumbs down from a product standpoint, right? Like, we're getting, like, Pacers Hornets some years in games that are, like, 20-point blowouts on a Tuesday or Wednesday just to say they had it. Like, the play-in tournament has devalued the whole regular season in some ways, too, because you can play so poorly for so long and still be in it. And the regular season was already devalued just because it's so long, you know? And over half the teams in the NBA are making the playoffs. So to me, I kind of like the in-season tournament. The play-in tournament's been weird to me in the past few years.
Definitely going to be 100% against everything you just said. The in-season tournament's been mid. I'm gonna start with that. It's been mid. The play-in tournament has been phenomenal. Now, here's what I'm asking you to do when I say that. Look at the Eastern Conference and say, It has been subpar, but in the Western Conference, every year you've got real teams.
We had the Patrick Beverley stance on the scorers table for the Timberwolves one year, right? Like that was pretty cool.
That's what I'm saying.
Not just that, though, game.
But when you have like the Kings and the Warriors playing just for the right to play in the playoffs, and then the counter for the Eastern Conference, which usually is subpar, is you had a team climb from the play-in tournament all the way to the NBA Finals. I think that validates the idea that 10 teams getting in, and it's so much harder from that play-in. You understand what it is. Like, even if I get out of this, I still got to play the one seed or the two seed.
Well, no one's climbed to the NBA Finals yet all the way.
The Heat.
They would have been an 8 seed still that year, right?
Yeah.
Maybe so, but they still had to get through the play-in.
They were the upper play-in tournament,
but
they still had to get through it.
For sure, they were in and got there. But, like, to me, the point, it doesn't feel like high leverage basketball. I mean, like, back to the in-season tournament, like, I remember, like, the Rockets-Warriors game. Steve Kerr and the Warriors were, like, devastated they lost that game. I'm not entirely sure why, but they did buy in, so that was great.
Well, you know, the Pacers.
Yeah, certainly, obviously, but, like, the play-in tournament here, look, the Bulls are going to be in it again. That's how it goes. This is what they do these days.
That is
so
what
I think
do.
I should probably embrace it in Chicago, but I just appreciated the race for the 8 seed more, like 66% of teams in your league making some sort of play-in or chance to get to the playoffs, to me is a bit too much. But I digress from that, so we can probably talk more Bulls.
Well, I mean, it all goes together. You know, that's the thing. And I think the Bulls are an excellent example of having it go together when you consider what AK has said. You know, I mean, his words have seemed to match his actions. As to whether or not that was what you want to do for your franchise long term is the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's at every trade deadline, it's kind of matching the actions, right? Like, he last year stood pat because he still wanted the veterans to make a push for it. This year, he said a lot of things at the trade deadline, right? It was certainly a mixed message. He was directly asked by a couple good reporters, like, how are you viewing if you were to make it, if you weren't to make it? And he claimed it was good either way, which is, you know, what an executive would try to do for a spin zone. So whatever happens, they're happy with. But in this case, you look at it, to me right now where the Bulls are, I don't put a lot of stock in what the team is doing, like the climb up the standings, the fact that they might get the 9 seed instead of the 10 seed, or they're going to get the 10 instead of the 11, then maybe they get to 8 like Marshall thinks could happen. I put more stock into the individual player performances, like Coby White doing what he's done for a month straight, and I know he won back-to-back Player of the Week awards, but like, this has really started since the All-Star break, started in early March. I mean, this is a whole month of averaging 30 points on 50%+ shooting. That to me is a big deal. The fact that the Bulls are or aren't winning games, and they have been winning most of them lately against teams that may or may not be trying organizationally, and I always add the word organizationally there. We know the guys in the court are playing hard, but these teams aren't completely invested in March. So I put the team success aside largely for the Bulls. There's some good things to see in some of these young guys by way of consistency to me.
Coby White averaging 18.2 points per game before the All-Star break, averaging 26.2 points per game since, and his true shooting is higher afterwards. He's getting to the free throw line more. He's actually shooting worse from three, but that's kind of the story, is that he doesn't just rely on threes anymore. Now he gets into the paint, and some of the moves he's shown with his handle, his ability to put the ball on the floor and finish, that's probably the most impressive part of his development to me over the course of this season.
Well, he said he's had some of these step-throughs. I think there was one late in the third quarter last night where he's stopping, starting, getting defenders off balance. Like, we didn't see that from him 2 years ago. We didn't see it as much from him last year. He certainly improved his ball handling a great deal in the past couple of years. And now it's like the ball's in his hands more. And he's learning how to use speed, acceleration, deceleration to get better looks in the paint, which is why, I mean, you go back to his rookie year in the NBA, he was finishing like layup stuff at the rim at like 49% rate, I think. It's in the 60s now, obviously, at a higher volume against tougher competition, where he's kind of the high usage guy. Or I should say, by way of tougher competition, he's number one on the scouting report now for opponents when they're trying to stop him and game plan for the Bulls. So what you've seen from Coby is amazing. And like, to me, I know you guys touched on a little bit, like, his future's a huge question because of the contract situation. If I was the Bulls, as well as he's playing, I still sit there and have the phone ready to answer for anyone that wants to make a trade offer, because they could make a big trade offer. We don't know how the rest of the NBA views him at this point, but he has risen another level with his play here in the past month plus, showing he can do it. Because you got to think, like, for the first couple of months of the season, something was off with Coby. And maybe it was just the fact that, again, he's playing sidekick to Zach LaVine, whereas LaVine was injured most of last year. And Kobe's going back to the awkward role kind of with the Bulls. But his shooting numbers were down a little bit. His turnover rate was up a little bit. His assist numbers percentage was just down a bit. Like, all these little things at the margins and the edges, it didn't feel like he was in the middle of the winning plays as much anymore. That's completely flipped, completely changed, and great to see from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we've seen a 2-year development arc with him. I don't know that anybody would argue against it. I wonder if he's part of the comeback player of the year discussion again this year. I don't know how you could be, though, given that that's what you did last season.
He's averaging 1 point more per contest this year than he was last year. And all his other numbers look the same.
What did it take for Ja, though? Because I'm pretty sure the ceiling was already fairly high on Ja.
Yeah, but Ja took it to another level.
Ja then just gave the most improved player award to a teammate or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's a weird award of how people view it, the NBA. But, like, you look forward, Kobe White being an all-star next year should be a goal for him. It should be a goal for the organization. That's the next natural step. The reason he hasn't been is because he's never strung it together consistently in the NBA for pretty much a whole season. And you go back to the three-point shooting stuff. That's a great point, Marshall. Getting to the line like seven times a game this month is huge because we know Kobe can get hot and shoot 50% from three for a week or two, 3 weeks at a time even. But when he's just having a league average three-point shooting output over a long course and doing this, that's great to see.
Just to hammer home your point about the 50% from the three, these numbers are insane. Since the All-Star break, these numbers are insane. 22.6 points per game, 10.2 rebounds per game, 9.1 assists per game.
You're not talking
shooting
about Kobe anymore.
53% from three. Did you hear me? 53% from three.
You're
that's
talking about someone
game.
Else in the
that's
Bulls backcourt.
That's Josh Giddey. And he's almost averaging a triple-double while shooting over 50% from three. I don't know what to do with this because I told Layla he's going to get his $30 million per year minimum. And she's like, really? And I'm like, really? And
no,
he continues to play.
I'm just laughing because first KC, and I know you remember this, Cody, he was estimating Giddey to get 22 to 24.
Yeah.
And that was before this hot streak. Then it became 25. Now over the weekend, it's gone up to 30. I think the Lakers line alone probably got him like 5 more million.
I've been at 30 the whole time. I just want to point that out because I know how AK
looks.
You saw
what was coming. Yeah,
yeah.
You saw what was coming. I would still play hardball if I was the Bulls, right? Because there's not a lot of salary cap space out there. The risk for the Bulls is he signs a qualifying offer, plays on a one-year contract to become an unrestricted free agent, which virtually no one ever does with $100 million on the table. You might see it sometimes with smaller contracts or offers on the table here and there, but that rarely happens. And, like, it is important for that. But, like, if you're asking me what I think is going to happen and how I would approach it, I think those are two different things. I would hedge toward $30 million as well at this point. Like, if you see this summer comes across the ticker, you know, 4 years, $120 million, I'll be like, we saw that coming. You know what I mean? Like, that's what the Bulls are going to do. I would play hardball. I would still go out there, see what offers he can get, or have my number, have him come back to it. That would be closer, certainly, to $25 million. I'm sure there's a lot of analytics out there and true believers that would say, you know, he's going to be worth $18.2 million, give him 4 years, 72. Like, that's not how it's going to play out, right? Like, that's not how the NBA economics are going to work. There's still questions about his defense, right? He had eight steals against the Lakers, but Luka Doncic lit him up for a while. Jamal Murray went around him a few times last night pretty easily.
Many times.
So, like, you have to realize, like, the defense that he's shown maybe in some flashes, I don't know how much staying power there is. But, yes, this is the Josh Giddey that the Bulls build when they acquired him, right? A guy who can put up triple-doubles close to those numbers. You're playing at a fast pace, so, like, the ball being in his hands all the time, it's not a shock that he's getting up to 29-8, stuff like that as an average over a long time. But he has been much more assertive going to the hoop. He puts that shoulder down and wants to go through people now rather than, like, he was shooting that floater earlier in the year. Billy Donovan wanted to see him be more aggressive and decisive in there, and he seems to understand what his physicality and size can do to open up passing lanes to others, to get the defense off balance, and to finish at the rim himself.
Layla, he shot 75% from the free throw line in the first half. He's shooting 84% from the free throw line after the All-Star break.
That's how you win games. That's it for me. Like, that when you, that's offensive efficiency. It's when you get to the line, that's when you really improve your scoring.
And the Bulls get to the line less than anyone in the NBA, but they've been doing it better lately. They have been doing it better lately.
I'm so glad you brought it up because I brought it up earlier in our 10 o'clock segment. Cody Westerlund, always a great time. Great talking to you. Yeah, I'll be at the game on Thursday too. I'm filling in for Alyssa Bergamini. So, game of the year, people.
I'm glad you get to see LeBron because you just got to cherish it. You never know when it could be his last game at the United Center. And guys get older, maybe he plays in the NBA next year, but you don't always know if he's healthy either.
Yeah, and what's funny is I saw Kobe Bryant's last game at the UC too in person. So you're right. You never know. Cherish the moment. We cherish our time with you, Cody. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cody.
Coming up next, there has been some audio floating around that was issued by one Chicago's Patrick Beverly. John Shire had his chance to respond. We'll let you listen to both next on The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
And that's it. It's all Duke. Heading back to the Sweet 16. The Blue Devils demolish Baylor. 89 to 66. And the number one seed in the East region is safe and thriving.
We know Duke is advancing easily so far through the NCAA tournament. That's nothing new. Marshall, you have your hand up like you have a thought right now.
No, I'm just getting ready to talk whenever you give me some. So I'm waiting to catch something, like okay. when you throw okay. it my way.
But this piece of audio has been floating around the internet space for a while. We've been meaning to get to it, but news has gone on and other things. But we have to shout out Patrick Beverly's podcast because the way he complimented John Shire for being a high school age peer coming up was pretty incredible because they're both Chicago area people. Let's take a listen.
John Shire story. Mind you, if anyone doesn't know John Shire, he played at Glenbrook North. When I say Roan, he never ducked any smoke from any athlete in Chicago. He never ducked any smoke. If you're from the west side of Chicago, your high school is in the hood, I'm on my way, I'm coming, I'm playing. If you are high ranked, ranked closer to me, it's okay, I'm coming to play. Any Christmas tournament, Proviso West, John Shire, yeah, the coach at Duke, I'm on my way, I'm playing. I don't give a who y'all think y'all is. They call him the White Mike. He was so cold. It was my in the projects walking to his games. Wrong. You don't hear what I'm saying. Walking to his games at Proviso West. He had a stardom that no other kid had in Chicago. And his school wasn't even in Chicago. They were in Glenbrook North. He won national championship. I got a chance for me and him to actually be on the same team. Mind you, when we played in high school, he was Mr. Illinois. Now we're in the Miami Heat together. We're trying to make it. We're in the summer league together. We're on the same court together. I think someone throws an outlet. A guy reaches in by the name of Joe Ingles, pokes him in the eye. Legally blind.
Damn.
Could never play basketball again. Had to get on a helicopter off to another hospital just to fix his eye.
So that was Patrick Beverly, which I think, knowing him, is probably some of the highest compliments he can give when it comes to being the man about work.
White Mike.
White Mike.
I hadn't heard that before.
So that totally took over the internet, as you can imagine, after Pat Bev said that. He's always a great storyteller. You can say what you want, but he is a heck of a storyteller, that is for sure. Well, it was only a matter of time before someone asked John Shire about what Patrick Beverly had to say.
There was a viral clip this week of Patrick Beverly who said, I want to quote him right, You never duck any smoke, and he called you White Mike back in the day. Given your resume, are there times you have to remind today's players and recruits about your resume back at Duke?
They completely have disregarded the fact that I played at all. You know, they think I did not play whatsoever. Isaiah last week, you know, there's a picture of me in my playing days, black and white picture. He said it wasn't photoshopped at all. Like, that's the way it was. So I asked our guys a couple days ago to call me White Mike. They refused. They're just going to call me Coach. But that's nice of Pat to talk about me that way. I mean, for me, I take a lot of pride in the city of Chicago and going wherever there was a game. You know, I would go there to play. So for him to talk about me that way, I'm not sure White Mike was the name, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious when you consider how quickly the legend can go from being a legend to being an old man when it comes to your high school game like that.
Listen, here's what I learned about young people a long time ago once I stopped being a quote-unquote young person. We don't give credit for nothing unless we see it with our own eyes.
Especially now.
It's like, wait, that old man used to do what?
No,
like,
he didn't.
It starts with this. When you're young, someone tells you they're 30, and you're like, oh, you're old. Like, what? But that's really how they look at it.
Did you see the video last year, Bears social media? They asked Bears players at what age you consider old.
What were the answers?
Like 30. Everybody's saying 30.
These are adults?
Somebody said 26 just to troll somebody else.
My God.
Mercedes is just shaking his head.
He's a grandfather then. Gramps.
Yeah, I mean, how do you even refer to Mercedes Lewis when it comes to that conversation?
No, but kids, Lou, when you're in high school or younger, you think of someone who's an adult as old just because they exist. They existed past college, basically.
They
they're
have
old.
Responsibilities.
Yeah, they're adults.
Do you pay a bill?
Yeah, you pay bills? Oh, you're old. It's over for you.
And obviously, I think with the advent of stuff like TikTok, where youth is even more prized, you're hearing kids talk about skincare from the age of like 6.
What?
Then being young is even more of an asset. But I say to those kids, it's fine. You can call me old because unfortunately, by the end of all of this, your youth may be all you have as an asset. So go right ahead and celebrate it as far as I'm concerned.
This just makes
me
want to go.
We can't buy houses. So I get it. But I do laugh at John Shire laughing at it. But the whole thing was just cool. I love a good somebody telling me a story, you then asking about that person, the tale of somebody being legendary in high school, how that person looked up to the other person, and then they're asked about it because they're in a completely different role now.
I think we just need to appreciate more people who take the time out to give others their flowers. In this me, me, me era, anyone talking about someone else in a good way is something that you should appreciate because it doesn't happen as often as it used to.
Amen. And I do. I love it when people tell me stories. Like, I know I don't watch a lot of movies, but I love it when people tell me movies. Like, I just love being told a good story.
You like being told movies?
I got one
for you. Transformers the movie.
Was it more than meets the eye?
Nah, I mean, it was, because all my childhood heroes died on the screen together.
No, that's how it ends?
So what you don't realize when you're a kid, oh, a spoiler alert, I guess, for a movie that was
big
made in the 1980s.
Big time spoiler alert.
When you're a kid, you don't understand the movie.
Spoiler alert.
Cartoons are literally just half-hour advertisements for new toys. So when they made Transformers the movie, the whole idea was we're going to kill all of the Transformers you own so that you have to go out and buy new toys. That was the premise of Transformers the movie.
You mean to tell me that they were trying to tell us to soothe self-made trauma with more purchases?
Yes.
Do you think that's grown in the years that have gone on since you watched
it? It has become a core tenet here in America and beyond.
Interesting.
Capitalism is going to capitalize.
Interesting. Big if true. We also are getting some Shire testimonials, by the way.
Oh, 847
played against Shire in high school. We were in conference. It was unreal. 847, Shire was on the same level as Rose in high school. Games were must-see. Pack gyms. Has Chicago ever had a player like that since? EJ Liddell was 2 times Mr. Illinois. Jabari Parker. I would offer Parker. Okafor, Mr. Illinois 2000 to 2007 was an incredible run of great talent. Man, you're not lying. It's a good point.
Yeah, listen, John Shire cannot be denied. I remember watching him when he was at Duke doing his thing.
I remember him in high school. Yeah, but I remember him at Duke, obviously, but I didn't hear about him when he was in high school.
I like 773 talking about our conversation about old. This is hilarious. As I listen with my high school basketball players in the car with me, old high school coach.
I bet you were awesome in high school, old high school coach.
And also, Marshall, Transformers the movie was amazing. I still watch it. That's from 608.
Hey,
as you should. Layla needs to watch this movie.
Hey, old high school coach, tell the kids we're sorry. They just inherited what was put in front of us. I'm sorry. That said, transition is next on The Score.